So, hello and welcome everyone to Friday's edition of The Pulse, URN's daily news show, where we're discussing the news that matters to you. I'm Emily and I'll be your host for today, and tonight I'm joined by Ethan, Jasmine and Isabel. So tonight we're going to be discussing the controversy over the Meghan and Harry interview, including Piers Morgan's response on Good Morning Britain, the developments of the Sarah Everard case and the rising concerns over women's safety, local concerns in Nottingham over John Lewis closing in the Intu shopping centre and what this means for the high street. And finally, we'll be discussing the possibility of Netflix cracking down on password sharing. So first we're going to go over to Isabel, who's going to be telling us about the Meghan and Harry interview backlash.
Okay, so just a little bit of background knowledge in case you have been living under a rock. Harry and Meghan actually, obviously Harry is Prince Charles's son, and Harry and Meghan stepped back from their senior royal duties in January 2020, which caused outrage and shock to the whole British public, but it wasn't exactly an unexpected move following the conflict that Harry and Meghan have been having with the British media and tabloids for some time. For example, with papers such as the Daily Mail criticising Meghan about every aspect of her life in public, for example, saying that her eating avocados was causing a human rights crisis. Today, Meghan and Harry are in Santa Barbara in California and have recently broke their silence over what has been going on over the past year. And over the past fortnight, they have appeared on both James Corden's Late Late Show and the Oprah Winfrey Show, with the latter generating the biggest reaction, and which will be the centre of our talk today. So I just wanted to ask you guys, what did you think about the interview as a whole?
Like you said, I didn't find it shocking what they said, because, I mean, especially as someone in Britain, we've seen all of this happening already in the news and stuff. But what really strikes is how it's had such a backlash with the media, with people like Piers Morgan attacking them for claims that are actually quite believable.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it was as you say, in some senses it was very shocking, and in other senses it was kind of a very predictable interview with what was said. And what I did find quite interesting was, obviously, there were some quite controversial things mentioned that were clearly going to stir up debate. But obviously, they have both stepped back from their royal duties, so I thought it was interesting that they're bringing themselves kind of back into the spotlight again. And obviously, they, I believe after the Oprah interview, also put a picture out to announce that they were expecting a girl in the summer and things. So I think it's quite an interesting one in that they have moved away from media attention, but obviously this has very much brought the spotlight back on them, but hopefully for more important reasons and stories that need, or sort of issues that need discussing more.
Yeah, I guess it was like their chance to tell their side of the story, especially Meghan. Like, she's just had so much backlash in British press, so she never really got the chance to say her story. She just got her privacy invaded without her permission. So I think it was good that, especially when she's talking about her mental health and how it just wasn't dealt with the right way at all in the royal family, like, it was important for her to say that.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
It's also interesting. Sorry.
No, carry on. Go on.
I think it's also interesting looking at how this has divided through generational lines. If you look at the reaction from the young generation, we all seem to be on the side of Meghan and Harry, and we all seem to sort of feel bad for them. But then if you look at the older generation, like parents, grandparents, they all seem to be on the side of the royal family, and I think that's interesting to look at.
Yeah, for sure. Before we move on to the whole controversy over the Piers Morgan appearance on Good Morning Britain, I just wanted to also ask you guys, do you think that this was the right time and place to make all of these accusations and revelations? Because obviously people have been saying that these are quite severe accusations of racism, of lack of mental health support when Meghan was suicidal. So do you think it was the right time and place to do it live on TV in America?
I think it's a difficult one, because we're never going to know kind of what went on behind the scenes and actually who did know beforehand, and, you know, how much the royal family got to see before it was aired and everything. But I do think, personally, something doesn't quite sit right that it was done in a very kind of reality TV show way. It was kind of that American influence in it, and that, you know, as I say, sort of reality TV element to it. I wouldn't say that means it shouldn't have happened like now. And as I said, I think there were some really important topics brought up. But I think it was an interesting way for it to have been broadcast. And as I say, particularly with it being on American talk shows, not British. And yeah, I don't know. I can't kind of go either way. I'm very torn over it, I'd say.
I think it's hard because of the family that they are. I think it's hard to escape that idea of reality TV or like in the spotlight, because they are the biggest family in the world almost.
Mm.
Whatever setting you put it under, it's going to feel a little bit like a reality TV show because it's so far from our reality almost.
Yeah,
I think doing it in that kind of way was the only way they were gonna be able to be as open as they wanted to be. Like, I don't know what other way they could have done it without it being, I guess, as effective as it was, or like without them getting across what they wanted to.
That's a good point, actually. I suppose, like, had they've done it in Britain, what maybe would have been censored, or, you know, there was almost no stopping them through doing it in America, I suppose.
Yeah, it's also like, I guess, what outlet in the UK would kind of let them produce all these revelations. But also, yeah, I do agree with all of you there. And going on to the Piers Morgan interview before we go on to the next section, obviously the most public reaction to Harry and Meghan's interview was by Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain, with him even accusing Meghan of lying and performing, which particularly shocked viewers in regard to her comment about suicide. So I just wanted to ask you guys, do you think that Piers Morgan leaving / being asked to leave Good Morning Britain is an infringement of freedom of speech?
I don't know. I guess it's kind of difficult to answer that without like my own personal opinion of him getting in the way, because personally I think he should have left a long time ago. But I mean, I guess everyone does have the right to say what they want, but then at the same time, when people come on his show and try to like say their own opinion, he just yells at them and doesn't really give them a chance to say what they think. So it's a bit hypocritical, one-sided.
I think it's also important to remember freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom of consequence. And the amount of Ofqual complaints that they got, it speaks volumes. If he's going to speak in that manner, he should expect consequence for it, whatever he says. So yeah, he can have the right to say it, but that doesn't mean that he has the right to get away with it almost.
I also think as well, what I saw on Twitter, what made a lot of people particularly angry, was that ITV have obviously been running throughout kind of COVID, really, this, I think it's called Time to Talk campaign, all about opening up, discussing mental health, reaching out to people. And then they're allowing somebody to go live on air and accuse someone of lying about a mental health issue. And I think things like that is what we really need, what, you know, ITV and the producers should really be looking at, is that they're putting one message out on the ad breaks of this show, and then you're cutting to a show that's doing almost the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, definitely. And also, when he was discussing about whether or not the comments about Archie's skin colour was racist, like, what right does he as a white man have to decide whether or not something is racist?
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult one with Piers Morgan, because he's always been outspoken, and in a sense that is his character. But at some point there's got to be a line drawn, and I think things like this just came across. He was so kind of blasé and flippant about it, just saying, no, that's, I don't believe it, I want proof. Well, you don't have a right to ask for proof to find out if someone had mental health issues, you know, so
yeah
and I think he, as such a controversial figure, it has been kind of surprising over the whole pandemic how people have almost viewed him as this like figure of hope, and he's the one speaking out against these politicians, and he's been kind of flipped over from what we traditionally know him as, and he's been kind of the one that people have been looking to challenge people in these times. So I did think it was only a matter of time before he said something like this, and it actually led to his downfall, because it's kind of like that saying, like, the, what's it, like, the higher you go, the further you fall, kind of complex.
I suppose it's the issue with characters like him the public very much want him on side when he is doing good things, quite rightfully.
Yeah, totally.
And also quite rightfully when he doesn't, you know, there needs to be some balance of like, can we just have you when you're speaking out about good things and using your platform in a good way? But obviously with somebody like a character like him, you can't kind of have the good without the bad. And so it's a case of, do you take it all away or do you just...
I'm sure it's not the last time that we'll see him anyway. I'm sure he'll pop up on a new show.
Oh, definitely.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think he's even tweeted that, saying that like my reemergence is going to be better than ever or something like that.
Oh god.
So he'll be back.
Sounds like a Donald Trump campaign or something.
It really does. But yeah guys, that's all I wanted to discuss on that matter.
So we are now going to be gearing over to Jasmine to discuss the developments of the Sarah Everard case.
Okay, I'll just give some background information. So in the past week, a woman named Sarah Everard was reported missing after she left her friend's house in London to walk back to her own house alone at night. And it's been confirmed today that remains that were found in Kent are hers. So it's a murder case, basically. And this like tragic news has kind of sparked conversations on social media about the safety of women in public spaces and like why... like this hasn't been dealt with before and how has this like been allowed to happen and that kind of thing. And many women have also came forward with their own stories of sexual harassment and assault and coming forward about how like it's normal to have a list of precautions that you need to take every time you go out by yourself. So I just have a couple of questions to like talk about or discuss, I guess. So I guess it feels like that the country, or particularly men, are just starting to wake up to the preventative safety measures that women have to take when going anywhere by themselves. What do you think needs to be done to ensure that women are more safe in public spaces?
I think what's really important is gearing the conversation towards education and even towards media portrayals, because I mean, obviously I'm a man. And I see like the conversations that it's men that need to like sort this out, and quite rightly so, it is men who are in the wrong. But the men that are doing these bad things need to be educated better that what they're doing is so wrong. I know that it's so wrong, so because of that, I know that every other man also has the ability to know that it's wrong. And it's a case of educating and showing men where they're going wrong. And I think that needs to be done from an early age, and it's hard.
Yeah, I agree. And particularly with the thing about making public spaces safer, I actually saw some posts on, I can't remember what it was on before, it was on some Facebook page, saying that some universities have like these things in place where like people can walk you home from libraries and like walk you across campus and stuff. And I guess things like that are definitely needed in the short term, but as has been said, in the long term it's the education that needs to be the priority, because, and also the men need to be just as involved in the conversation as women are, because I've seen, obviously over the past few days since the case came out, like women all over my Instagram posting all the stuff, all the horrific statistics about sexual harassment, etc. But it needs to be both men and women in the conversation, and not just women kind of standing up for themselves, because you need the men to be involved because they're the ones who are perpetrating it.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like because harassment is so normalized, like some men don't even realize that they're doing it or realize that it's wrong. Like there's just not enough education on that part.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So after kind of what came out over the last couple of days, I was discussing it with a couple of my friends last night, and I was saying to the boys, like, there's so many little things like that you wouldn't even think about that women have to do. So like just, you know, what you'd wear to a club, like if you wear a skirt, like making sure you put shorts on underneath, like are just tiny little things that I would do before a night out, like because of, like almost like preemptively in case something were to happen. But I also think as well, like obviously my housemates and I were discussing, all the social media posts are absolutely incredible, but and making people aware, but the likelihood is kind of our circles on social media that we're sharing them to are already aware and thinking about it, both men and women. You know, a lot of the boys were saying to me, like, about the statistics, that they had kind of been aware of the statistics, but as I think Ethan said, like, it's very much that education and targeting, probably from a young age, to teach, like, boys and girls what's right, what's wrong, like, and it very much being a way that you're brought up, because of course when people get to adulthood and they have certain kind of, well, prejudices and ideas in their mind, like, it's a lot more difficult to change that mindset, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. When I was, like, in school, there was no, like, educational conversations about consent at all, and that clearly needs to be reinforced, and, like, we need to educate people on that.
And I think as well a fear of not re-educating people later in life as well. So, like, yes, as I just said, obviously it needs to be kind of brought in from a young age, but I think, like, my PSHE lessons stopped at about year 10. I mean, we were still only about 15. Like, we were still all just kind of learning about the world at that point. So to maybe have done something in sixth form would have been probably as useful and kind of helpful. Yeah. But it just was almost, you reached 16 and you knew everything about the world and that was it. You were left kind of to yourself, I would say. I don't know if everyone else's experiences were the same, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that I feel like, as you say, Emily, that kids who are younger who don't really understand it or haven't experienced a circumstance where that could happen, it, and it's not as relevant to them. Obviously it can happen at any age and I'm not disregarding that, but I mean obviously it's more common in adult males and adult females, but as you said, that if the education was maybe in sick form at a time when, like, people are going out, people are, I don't know, meeting new people, then that would be a good time to also have it. But as Jasmine says, that I think that it should be kind of ingrained in education as well throughout.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about how, like, for example, I feel like, I'm guessing, like, Emily and Izzy, your experiences have been similar, but I've always been told, oh, when you go out, make sure you carry your keys with you, or walk near a main road and make sure it's well lit and don't wear anything provocative and maybe call someone on the phone and let, like, someone know your location, like, all of these different precautions and preventative measures just in case something happens. I feel like a lot of women have to think about, and then I feel like sometimes there's, like, this culture of victim blaming where if something happens to a woman, it's kind of like, oh, well, it's your fault because you shouldn't have been alone at night, or, like, what were you wearing, or these kinds of things, when really we should be shifting the blame onto the perpetrators who actually make women feel scared to go out alone at night.
Yeah, I actually saw a Instagram post about this before, again, because obviously Instagram's been blowing up with all of this recently, where it was saying how when we record statistics of, like, sexual harassment or rape or something, it's always, oh, this many women have been raped, or this many women have been sexually harassed, instead of this many men raped women, this many men sexually, like, it's kind of, even though it's such a small twist of a sentence, it still kind of is like, oh, that woman got raped, as in, like, she put herself in the position to be in that position, which is totally not okay.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know if there's, like, a way in society that we can start kind of shifting that narrative a bit, so that it's not like made out to be the woman's fault for being in that position. I don't know if you have any ideas on that.
I think it's very difficult, because I think, as Ethan mentioned, like, obviously a lot of men and guys are completely aware, and so it's like, it's very much making sure to target the ones who perhaps aren't so aware, and also not, I think I've seen a few kind of posts on the contrary, like, almost like the it's not all men posts and things, and I think it's making sure to not push those who are allies away, like, doing it in a way that's saying, like, look, we appreciate you understand the situation, like, we appreciate you all doing your part, and we're not blaming you as an individual, like, it's if you get what I mean, like, it's very you've got to kind of strike that balance.
I think it's hard, because obviously, like, the Instagram posts talk about, like, what's gone on and how it's a problem, but also the same Instagram posts say that it is a a male problem, and yeah, in a sense it is, and it's hard to like think of a different word of because it's men doing it, but it can create like this defensive mechanism where you read the post and you think, whoa, I don't do that and I'm a man, so
exactly
I can't agree with definitely. That but at the same time you sort of have to agree because obviously it is men doing it, and there needs to be sort of a word for it instead.
I think also another like good thing is that if you're say a man who or men who like obviously know about it and like wouldn't do anything like that, they need to kind of be the ones to educate or call out harassment, or if they see their mates doing it, or like just educate other men in general, because I think when it comes from like another man, it is seen as like more powerful, I guess. It can have more of an effect.
Yeah, because certainly it's, like if you knew a friend who was doing something like that, you'd tell them straight away and they'd probably be more willing to listen because they, well, obviously they're the type of person who would listen to those voices more. And so I think it is important that men who are aware of the problem speak out, even if it's to friends or family.
Which again, I think brings it all back to education being the key, so that enough people are kind of aware of it enough to speak to other people about it.
Yeah, and I guess it also, going back to what we said before about like including those men in the conversation who are totally in support and who are allies, including them in the conversation will also kind of enhance that community between.
Yeah, because we'd seen, my housemate mentioned earlier that there was something going around about like a curfew for all men at 6 p.m. or something.
Yeah, I saw this
You know, that's really not, like, I know it's probably been put out as a joke even, but like, that's really not the message. Like, it's not, that is going to turn people's backs up.
I think it was blown out of context because I think it was meant to be a point saying how women have to change their routines in order not to be harassed, so why shouldn't men? But like, obviously, that is a bit, like, ridiculous. Yeah.
That's the issue, as you say, like something's taken out of context, and then this kind of hashtag goes around of like, oh, ban men from the streets at 6 p.m. like, and those people who maybe weren't quite on board with it anyway, but could have been convinced, are most certainly going to then turn around and go, well, no.
It can be toxic like that. Like you said, Emily, you don't want to drive people away or exclude people who do think the same that we do, and you don't want to, because all these hashtags and stuff, they can be quite toxic. Because they kind of create sides, and kind of you have to pick one or the other, when it should just basically be you pick the right, like the good side. And there shouldn't really be a divide over it.
I suppose it's just something that both men and women should be fighting for together. Yeah. It's not us against, you know, it's not a men versus women. Like, that's not at all it.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess that was all I wanted to discuss on this subject.
And I'm sure if there are any more updates in the case, we will cover it on The Pulse in our future episodes. So we're now going to go to a more local story with Nottingham, which I was reading about earlier. So it's the possibility of speculation of John Lewis's closing across the country, and also the possibility, which includes the possibility of the John Lewis in the Victoria Centre closing. So the bosses at both John Lewis and the Victoria Centre have declined to comment on kind of general national speculation that the department store could close. And there have been, I think 10 branches which have already closed down and permanently shut this year, and further reports of 8 more which could close. So someone said that there have been negotiations ongoing with like the store landlords into and everything. And apparently they reported a loss of $517 million over the last year due to COVID trading restrictions and lockdowns. So I suppose what I want to ask really is, do you guys think that COVID has ultimately caused the end of the high street?
I don't think it'll cause the end. I think the high street has been changing for a while, and COVID has certainly pushed the changes forward and sped it up, because we were already turning to online shopping and now it's all we can do. But I think that there'll always be a sort of pull factor towards especially clothing shops, because the idea of going out and trying things on before you're buying it, especially with clothes, is attractive. And I think that as much as it's going to like be smaller, the high street, I don't think it's something you can really ever get rid of.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think there's that aspect, but then I do think that it is going to damage it significantly, because there's obviously been development in services such as Klarna and Clearpay, where you can actually try the clothes on at home and not even pay for them and send them back before you even pay for them. So I don't know, I guess technology is kind of advancing so quickly at the minute that you never really know what's going to happen.
I also think that after being in lockdown for so long, like, it would just be nice to actually go into a shop and just have like the typical shopping experience.
Definitely.
I just feel like a lot of people will want to go back to that, like to kind of try and regain some kind of normality. Like, even though it might never go back to what it was before the pandemic, I feel like people still definitely want to go out and have the physical shopping experience.
I was talking to my housemates about this the other day, going like, I can't wait to just go to, like, I don't even know, like Zara. Can wait in the queue for Zara.
Just some socks from Primark, please.
Honestly. Yeah, Primark.
I think just even being... people who didn't shop that much before lockdown, because of lockdown, there's certainly going to be somewhat of a boom in the high street, because everyone took it for granted before, and now it's sort of like an exciting that we can do, and everyone's going to want to be out.
Currently my trip is to the post office to take all my shopping back, so
it might actually save the high street if you think about it in that way, because it was already on the decline before COVID, so maybe the novelty of it will at least short term revive it a little bit.
It's kind of depressing that we're excited to go to the shops.
Speaking of kind of whether it might revive it, obviously last summer we saw things like Eat Out to Help Out, and then there was discussion of doing kind of a similar thing for bigger events like theatre and concerts and things. We obviously haven't seen that come into action yet, but do you think we'd ever see the government introduce anything like that, like Eat Out to Help Out for shopping, to encourage people? Or, as we say, do we just think that demand will be high enough that that kind of won't be necessary?
I don't know. I think that, like, at Christmas when the shops opened after that mini November lockdown, I went into Nottingham and it was absolutely, the queues were literally round Market Square. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, obviously that's probably like the initial reaction, and it will like die off pretty quickly. But I don't know. It seems like every time I've been throughout the past year when it's been on and off opening, they've been quite busy.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's not totally like irrational to think that that might happen, because obviously we already have things like Black Friday where there's huge sales in clothes. So it isn't like a crazy thought, but also I think it would be more down to the shops whether they wanted to do sales. I think the government probably wouldn't get involved with that, especially since they've already spent so much money doing other schemes like Eat Out to Help Out. And I think shops are a lot more like readily willing to put their own goods on sale, whereas restaurants less so much.
I suppose as well it was a lot easier over lockdown. As we say, most shops were probably trading online and arguably didn't lose as much as restaurants that obviously simply just couldn't work for upwards of 3 months. So
yeah. I feel like the fact that shops were already online before this pandemic started kind of like helped, like, not, well, I guess it just like helped the whole situation in the like first place. I don't know.
No, I was going to say as well, I think I would argue places like John Lewis are the ones that wouldn't take as much of a hint. I would think that we would see probably less independent shops. They'd probably be the ones struggling, but I wouldn't think such a kind of giant retailer like John Lewis would struggle come when we're able to go back out shopping.
Yeah, I guess, but I've seen a lot of things online, obviously, because who isn't online at the minute, but about Amazon kind of taking over, because obviously John Lewis is kind of, well, I guess the homeware factor, you can't really take that away from John Lewis, particularly because people like the whole experience of going there and picking stuff out, but all the gadget kind of side of it that people used to go to John Lewis for, Amazon is kind of like dominating that sector now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, I think it's very up in the air. It could go either way.
I'd agree. Mm-hmm. I think, as Ethan said, like the experience of shopping, some people would really love. And I know personally for me, when I go clothes shopping, I never have any idea what size I am, or I mm-hmm. can never tell what things look like online. And I really enjoy shopping in person and being able to like pick up the things and try them on. But I have some friends who couldn't think of anything worse than having to get on the bus, get into the city, you know, wander around a shop, seeing what you can find. Like, you can't filter it by your size or shape or colour. Or and so I think it very much depends on like what shopping experiences you're used to having, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that it's not just like with clothes that it's good to have a look at in person. I think with tech as well. I know you're saying about Amazon, but I think with some company like John Lewis, when you go into the store, you can just talk to someone and they have a lot of knowledge about a particular yeah. area. They can give you like the right advice on what product to buy, whereas you can't really get that as much online.
Totally.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Well, once again, I'm sure as any developments happen, if suddenly the Victoria Centre closes, we will let everyone know on the pulse. But we're going to go over, we're going to go on to our final story of this evening, which is Ethan's story all about Netflix possibly making us stop sharing our passwords with other people.
Yeah, so Netflix has been in the news today for supposedly trialling a crackdown on password sharing. The current rules, according to Netflix, are that you can create multiple profiles on an account, but those profiles all have to be people in the same household. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that is a rule that seems to have slipped under the radar, and I don't think many people actually follow it. However, people are saying that Netflix have already upped their prices this year, and it's unfair for them to then decide who gets to use the four profiles that are allowed with any account. So I just wanted to ask your opinions on whether you think this is a consumer responsibility that we should be following these rules, or is it Netflix being a greedy corporation?
I think it's come at a very interesting time for them to start cracking down. Also, you've had a year of lockdown now, where nobody can do anything except watch Netflix, and suddenly yeah. they're asking for more money. It does seem, I would say there seems kind of a greed element to it, and as I say, they've already upped their prices, they've had a year of probably thousands of people signing up. I think if that is the case, they do need to make it more clear. Like, I'm sure it's in the small terms and conditions, but that should be something when you like, you know, pop up as you make a new profile or something like that. But personally, I don't understand why they would do it, because ultimately, like with Netflix, you have to pay for the amount of screens that you can use at one time. So my account's only one screen. So whether I've given the password to my friend or not, only one of us can be watching it any one time. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, I do think it just seems a slightly kind of greedy, let's get some more people to sign up and forget they ever put their credit card details in and, mm-hmm. you know, let the payments roll, really.
Yeah, I agree, because I read that Netflix made a $2 billion profit this year, so wow. I feel like they definitely don't need any more money. And also, I mean, I know you just said that you have your own account, but like, well, I just use my parents' Netflix account because I don't want to get one for my own just for when I'm at uni. So even though I'm not living at home anymore, I'm still using their account. So I think it would be a bit unfair if like suddenly all these students had to get their own individual account.
Yeah, I agree. That would be really difficult.
I think so. Sorry.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, I think as well, one of the things, if I was Netflix, which I'm not, but I would be cracking down on the like free month trial you get, because the amount of people I know who've probably had about 10 free months because they just use some random emails and stuff mm-hmm. is ridiculous. So I'd be probably trying to solve the amount of months lost through the free trials and things, maybe.
Yeah, do you I've done that before.
Do you think that this idea of cracking down on password sharing might actually put people off who at the moment use somebody else's account? They might just decide not to pay for Netflix and not use this streaming service at all, and it might actually, now that there's like other options such as Prime and Disney Plus, that them saying that they're going to crack down on this could sort of shoot themselves in the foot.
I think so, because I think we're seeing actually a lot of shows are being bought up by Prime or Disney Plus, as you say, mm-hmm. and that Netflix aren't able to get their hands on everything. They don't quite have the monopoly over streaming services like they did maybe 2 years ago. And so I think, yeah, as you say, people will just go, okay, I'll get Amazon Prime then. We'll share that as a yeah. as a friend group, or, you know. So, yeah, I think that could be the case, definitely.
Also, I think it's quite easy for people to stream things, like, illegally now as well. So I feel like if people would rather do that than have to pay extra money for another Netflix account.
And even legally with YouTube and things, I mean, there's hours of content on YouTube or streams on Twitch, or, you know, like, there's so much content out there that you can get for free. Even TikTok, you can sit and scroll for days, can't you? So yeah.
I waste so much time on TikTok.
Me too.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more corporate greed rather than consumer responsibility, because firstly, like, they haven't made it that clear, and secondly, what defines a household? Because, for example, in my situation, like, I would say I'm in a household with my parents, but I'm not living with them at the moment. So I think, I don't know, it just hasn't really taken that into account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's something that has come into the news but will probably fall very short and not actually happen, because, as you say, it's hard to define a household, and it's probably even harder to prove this.
I was going to say, I imagine it's a bit like when you go on BBC iPlayer and it says, do you have a TV licence? Yeah. It's probably just a case
that
of going,
yep. That is
the
most trusting thing ever.
Or, are you over 18? Yep. Like, it's, I don't get how you can do it. They're going to ask for tenancy agreements or birth certificates or, you know, it's, yeah, I just don't see how it could be done.
I think I saw in the article that they would authorise it by sending, like, a code to it, a text number or an email or something, but if it was just like they sent it to the account owner's email address, for example, and they knew you were using the account, then they would just verify it, and even if you weren't in the same household,
yeah, you could just read the code to them
over, yeah, the exactly.
It's such a hard thing to prove that I really don't think Netflix will actually go ahead with cracking down, but I just thought it was interesting, and yeah.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say about it, really.
I definitely agree. Hopefully we won't all get locked out of our Netflix accounts over the weekend.
Fingers crossed.
We'll all come back next week and be going, okay, so Netflix were right. So that's all we have time for on tonight's edition of The Pulse. So thank you to Jasmine, Isabel and Ethan for joining me. And we'll be back probably on Monday at about 6 o'clock for a new week of news stories. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at URNPulse.